Дорогие друзья, я специально поставил Венедюка в конце. Last but not least. The last report is very important. That's why my report will be very last. Tomorrow. But today you are the last.
Alright, fine.
Okay, you're welcome, Dave. You are very welcome, and we are all ears.
Okay, thank you.
Я думаю, переводить не надо. Дэвидюка надо не переводить. Дэвид, we don't need a translation, so because everybody knows English.
Okay, I will speak extra slowly.
Yes. You have all your time. All your time. Don't hurry.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And first, let me thank the very esteemed organizer of this conference, Pavel, for being such a gracious host to all of us from around the world. And we must really thank the Russian people for producing such a man as he, and for the warm hospitality given to us in this city. And it's good for us to note at this conference that this city of Moscow is the greatest single concentration of European mankind in the entire world.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And it would be improper for me to begin this talk without speaking about the greatness of the Russian people. I have many friends, obviously, who are Germans, and the Germans like to speak of themselves often as the bulwark to the East. But the truth is that for every battle the Germans have fought in terms of the problems with the Far East or the non-European part of the world, the Russians have fought 100 battles in defense of European mankind. And we must always think about the fact that the Russians have been the great bulwark over the ages from the East. And all European mankind owes a debt of thanks, because without that bulwark, and without that tremendous barrier that the Russians threw up over the centuries, over the years, Europe may well have been overrun permanently. There has been certain incursions from the East, but the Russians were able to weaken the invaders. Also, I want to mention that I think as I travel the world, in many ways I see the Russian nation as the nation that is right now representing European mankind better than any other. Not perfectly, but better than any other. It's the only nation that's truly standing up to a degree against the New World Order, against globalism, against some of the machinations of the those who would really destroy European mankind. Very few leaders, for all his faults, very few leaders would talk about the need to increase the birth rate among the Russian people, as your president has recently done. And I hope, and I send my hopes to your president and his successors who will come, that they will resist the non-Russian powers of nihilism and deracination, and that the traditional anti-Russian alien power that's always threatened Mother Russia, that this will be kept at bay. I think and I hope that Russia will be a leader for the entire world, not just for the great Russian people. And our prayers are sincere that your president will act as a true son of his people who honors his mothers and fathers. We send him our respect and many of our hopes. I also want to say thank you to all the delegates that are here.
Indeed.
And because you indeed represent the courage of your own respective nations, the honor. Many of you have faced possible jail time and persecution by the government. For instance, my friend Guillaume, so many of us have faced this kind of problem, and you are leaders. And I must begin this talk by saying as well that almost every nation represented here has fought one another in history. We have all had terrible wars and terrible conflicts, and I think the fact that we're all here together in the celebration of our own heritage and our own rights and our own tradition, that we're all here together is symbolic of the fact that never again can we allow the white race to go to war with one another.
everybody understood.
Our people have scaled the highest mountains. They've plumbed the depths of the oceans. They've crossed great voids of space. Our people have unlocked the secret of the genome. Our medicine has saved hundreds of millions of people from innumerable perils of nature and disease. Our people have carved sculpture and brushed paintings as beautiful as any scene found in the natural world. We've written words that evoke the deepest of emotions, the greatest inspiration. Our technology has created a new world, and we've left our footprints on that silver orb in the sky at which man has gazed up at for millennia with awe and wonder. Yet simultaneous to this incredible fountain of achievements for our people, we have seen our people driven to the brink of non-existence. We have seen them driven to fratricide since 1914, and we are now only 8 years shy of 100 years of intermittent warfare that has now turned into terrifying proportions by technology. And it's even more scary that this technology is now in the hands, often under the control of many non-Europeans. Ancient foes who were only minor thorns in our feet centuries ago, but who now plant and nurture malignant tumors in the innermost and most sacred chambers of both heart and brain. There is a shadow lengthening across European and American continents. It represents the destruction of all that we love, the eradication from the earth of a people that represent the epitome of beauty to each of us, a folk whose magnificent history and works of art, culture, science stir wonder in our hearts and inspiration in our souls. That specter represents degeneration, decay, and destruction of our freedom, and ultimately even extinction of our genes. That's something that is aptly called genocide. For our people, the people of Athenia and Rome, of Russia and Italy, Spain and Norway, France and England, and North America, Australia and New Zealand, Germany, and so many other countries, we are now hurtling toward the precipice of genocide, a precipice that leads to the abyss below. Today, every nation of European descent faces a crisis not only of identity, but of even existence. Our birth rates are averaging 1.2 per household. Translated, that means we're liquidating more than 40% of our population with each generation. It's the greatest worldwide genocide in our history, even exceeding the plagues and invasions of the Middle Ages. Even the Black Plague worked its way through each nation for one generation and subsided. For in the face of the ancient pathogen of the Black Plague, our people worked up an immunity. In this case, the government and the media of the so-called West have worked overtime to suppress our natural immune system, our love of our heritage and nations. And they work to imprison, kill, and suppress in every way possible what I would call, in an analogy, the white blood cells that have struggled heroically against the invaders, against the infection. The current pathogens have now clearly worked their destructiveness through one generation, but they're not subsiding. They're only gaining momentum with time. The birth rate of our people is only 1.2 worldwide. What does that mean in real terms? It means that for every 100 European American men, women, and children, men and women, that they will give birth to fewer than 63 children. The next generation will bequeath fewer than 39 children. The next generation less than 25. The next fewer than 15. And in only the fifth generation, that original 100 will be less than 10. In other words, in the long existence of our people, stretching back for tens of thousands of years and thousands of generations, it will take only five short generations, an historical blink of the eye, to wipe out 90% of our population from the face of the earth. There are many reasons for the low birth rate. Probably the most dynamic factor is the alien media emanating primarily from Hollywood and New York that promotes a soulless, materialistic consumerism and solipsism. A degeneracy that attacks our deepest perception of morality and decency. And it leads to rates of disease that in turn lead to infection and sterility among men and women. Even homosexual self-destruction and non-reproduction. Hollywood's Brokeback Mountain, for instance, was not only an attack on the icon of my country's most heroic and masculine image, the American cowboy, it was a message to attack all of our values and standards wherever it played to audiences of European descent. Every homosexual couple, whether male or female, is another couple of Europeans whose genes are extinguished forever. Radical feminism, also driven to prominence by its non-European progenitors such as Betty Friedan and Gloria Steinem, as well as non-European media that I've mentioned earlier, has driven too many beautiful and brilliant women, as I see some here today, from giving those wonderfully expressed genes new life and new beauty. We must not forget the political sources of this low birth rate. The fact that so many of our people cannot afford to have children while they are forced to subsidize a growing non-European minority at home, and even the massive growing non-white majority see, really, around the world. As our population implodes, that of the third world explodes. And that mass is surging, pressing at our borders, pouring over them like the endless ocean that pours over the rails of a sinking, floundering ship. And as our ships of state sink, lower, the rush of the sea comes faster and faster. And my friends, there's an ancient and distinct supremacist group who supports and boasts of its non-European origin. And it's behind our walls of our white kingdoms, and they deceitfully and treacherously open the gates to our cities and our lands to the invaders. They have long since done such. They did it once before in terms of the Muslim invasions, both in Spain and in Constantinople. More on aspects of immigration in a minute, but as we discuss the immediate disasters wrought by mass immigration, we must never forget that there's no immigration problem in the West without the subversion of our societies. The subversion of our societies. When we were healthy at home, there was no prescient immigration threat. Rounding out this alien force within our societies is our first task. For just one of these subverters, in the counselors of government, are in the broadcasting booths of the mass media, they do more damage and are more dangerous to us than a million of the ragged barbarians pounding and tearing at our gates. They have, these non-Europeans, through a hypocritical team effort, deceitfully gained control of our major communication media and mesmerized many of our people into believing the extinction of our people will be a good thing. That it's not the greatest human catastrophe of all time, but somehow it will be a blessing on the earth. And that it somehow is noble for us to commit a racial suicide. Ironically, the same people who tell us the extinction of European mankind is good are the same ones who tell us that the greatest crime of all time was the alleged attempt in World War II of the Germans to drive the Jews to extinction. Yet somehow our demise is not considered a crime of immense proportions. This greatest of all human catastrophes is hardly even mentioned by the press or our politicians. For instance, what a scandal it is. What a scandal that this is only one of a tiny number of conferences held anywhere in the world that simply confronts and discusses the imminent disaster facing our folk. It's not just the reduction of numbers we face. The ways of non-European immigration conquer our mores, our faiths, our politics, even our serenity and security. In Europe, the East now has penetrated with its agents in every capital, making once serene and secure streets and neighborhoods and subways places of pregnant fear and aborted freedom. In America, illegal and legal immigration, differential birth rates, and European American sterility have transformed an overwhelmingly 90% European American majority with an almost 100% Western mindset to a nation where the 200-year overwhelming European American majority will become a minority in but a generation. Such demographic change is so terrifyingly fast, but it is but a blink in the eye of history. It's only a single second in our historical hour, but a second that can end a race as surely as a second that can still the heart of a living man. It's not just our aging population that's dying. It is us. Our history is dying. Our present, our future, our dreams, our hopes, and that of all that came before us, and those that sacrificed to give us material well-being, freedom, and life. And now, the most elemental of all, life. Life itself is seriously in question for our people. For we are a form of life on this planet no less distinct than the breeds of fish, our dolphins, our whales. Our expression of life and our very existence is being eradicated, erased from the earth. We can see many examples of this disregard for own European life and the less value they now place on European life. I give you an example. Let me quote from the Associated Press of November 4, 2005. The headline reads, "Paris rioters set woman afire as violence spreads." From France, marauding bands of Muslim youth set fire to cars and warehouses and pelted rescuers with rocks early Saturday as the worst rioting in a decade spread from Paris to other French cities. The United States warned Americans against taking trains to the airport by way of the strife-torn areas. A savage assault on a bus passenger highlighted the dangers of travel in Paris' Muslim-filled and impoverished outlying neighborhoods where the violence has entered its second week. The African immigrant attackers doused the woman in her 50s and on crutches with a flammable liquid and set her afire as she tried to get off the bus in the suburb of Severn Wednesday. Judicial officials said. The bus had been forced to stop because of burning objects in its path. She was rescued by the driver and hospitalized with severe burns. All over the world, the mainstream media describes the rioters as, quote, youths. At every opportunity, TV news will only show the scattered and rare white Trotskyite throwing a firebomb while ignoring the overwhelmingly clear fact that these riots are driven by racial hatred for all things European. Once in a while, a little truth ekes out in the control media. The Associated Press article makes clear who the rioters are, and it shows the brutality of the savages who are turning centers of European refinement, culture, and civilization into examples of the darkest horrors of Africa. Again, let me read that sentence to you. The African immigrant attackers doused the woman in her 50s and on crutches with a flammable liquid and set her afire. African immigrant attackers throw gasoline on a handicapped white woman and set her afire. Now, the tragedy is not just that poor woman's life and well-being and torture. The tragedy also is the reaction, or lack of it, to this vicious atrocity. Now, you tell me, any of you, tell me how the mainstream press would treat this if white attackers had doused a crippled, middle-aged black woman with gasoline and set her on fire. Tell me, please, would not every newspaper from Paris to Vladivostok to Sydney be screaming about the terrible and horrible racist crime as proof of the evil and racism of European mankind? Would not there be universal condemnation by the politicians against the racial dynamics of this vicious racist attack against a defenseless African woman? But with this white victim, there's only been deafening silence. In fact, there's no one in this room, including myself, that even knows her name. If it were an African victim, everyone in the world would know her name. There has been worldwide news that I might face hate crime charges in Sweden for simply telling the truth about the downside of immigration and about the crimes of the Jewish supremacist Israeli state. It was news all over France of our esteemed speaker here at this conference on his charges in France. But how is it that my moderate exercise of freedom of speech and our friend's moderate exercise of freedom of speech gets nationwide and worldwide publicity as a hate crime, but not one major media in the world is condemning the racially motivated burning alive of a crippled white woman? Not one politician has dared to even call this vicious act an act of incredible racial hatred, brutality, and sadism. No hate charges have been filed against those who burned this woman alive, this handicapped French middle-aged woman alive. Now, what is happening in France is the same story that happened in my once lovely home city of New Orleans in the African aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. And by the way, many of my friends that I see around the room, you know, wished me well and were concerned about my home and my well-being after that storm, and I thank all of you for that concern. The world heard of roving gangs of looters, but they weren't told that these gangs racially abused and targeted white people, raping, robbing, and murdering hundreds of European Americans in my city in the wake of the storm. In New Orleans, not only did the African savage gangs shoot at rescue helicopters and boats, they actually went into nursing homes for the elderly, and they went into children's hospitals and attacked the innocent in those places. They hurled racial abuse and attacked men, women, and children. But again, no major media or politicians condemn these racially motivated, physical, violent attacks. And most of you have never even heard of the plight of those who share your genotype in the forlorn, ravaged city of New Orleans. Now, do these events I just described in New Orleans and in Paris, do they sound like America? Do they sound like France? Hell no. It sounds like Mogadishu, not New Orleans and not Paris. At least not the New Orleans and the Paris of our fathers and mothers. And indeed, New Orleans and Paris and London and a host of other European cities are rushing headlong toward becoming Mogadishu. And unless things change, even the largest concentration of white people on the planet, right here, the city of Moscow, will be heading toward the same. Only the brain dead in Europe and America and Russia cannot help but realize that opening our borders to millions of non-Europeans is the most insane, traitorous action in perhaps the entire history of Europe. Yet it proceeds in all of its manifest evil. Millions of Europeans have sacrificed their lives over the centuries to protect the freedom, the culture, the very life of our European people. The politicians and media have literally given our nations to the invaders, and the gates open the gates. And now our people pay the price. The price will be first our freedom, and then our very existence. We will be driven to extinction under the attack of this ruthless hatred, unless. Europe and America are under the lie of democracy, when in truth, it's not a democracy that we live under in Europe and America. It's an oligarchy of money and power and privilege and alien loyalties that rule us. Every poll in every American nation has consistently shown that the great majority of our peoples have consistently opposed the immigration policies of our countries that are leading us to this apocalypse. But still, the governments do little to stem the rising dark tsunami of immigration and differential birth rates that threaten to wipe out our people. The media tells us that multiracialism only gives us blessings. Rising crime, gang rape, teeming ghettos of hatred, and barbaric riots are the real blessings of immigration, blessings that really are only curses to every decent impulse of our people and our civilization. Only the brain dead can fail to see the bloody and bleak horizon for Europe and the America of the future, and the ethnic cleansing going on right now before our eyes. We're being wiped away in our own homelands. Most Americans and Europeans already see this through the fog of media disinformation and political dissimulation. They rightfully oppose immigration and want the interlopers sent home as fast as we can find the boats and trains and planes to do so. But now Europeans and Americans must come to realize that simply wanting the protection of our nations, our children, our future is not enough. Wanting is not enough. Our cheers, our agreement, our assent, our hurrahs mean precious little. We must become active in the movements all over the world that will give our governments back to our people, that will establish a true democracy of the people's will rather than the alien oligarchy of media and money that rule us. Those of you here who are scholars, most of you, you must continue your research, but the time comes rapidly when you must put down your pen and your pencil and man the picket line, the campaign parade, the barricades if need be. You must also stand in the political arena and raise your voice for the survival of your people. Those of you who are businessmen must make your ultimate business the survival and freedom of your people, or there'll be no business any longer for your people. Those of you who are priests or clergy must save not only the souls of your flocks, but the holy genes that God in his design of nature has sculpted in such great beauty and wonder. I will address for a moment the frame of our approach to our masses and to the people of the world, for We are in a battle now for the heart and mind of our folk. Here are some realizations that I've come to that I'd like to share with you for a moment. Number one, our problem is ultimately internal, not external. A free and holy white Russia and Europe and North America face no insurmountable security issues from abroad. It is not the clash of civilizations between Europe and Asia and Africa that threaten us. It's the clash of racial and ethnic realities within our nations that threatens us. It is the dynamics of non-European influence over media and government that comprise our true Trojan horse that has the enemies within our gates. Our enemies want us to focus on external threats. In America and Europe, they want us to be concerned about Iraq and Afghanistan and Iran and the various groups that pose a supposed threat to America and Europe outside of our borders. All this while millions of non-European enemies of our folk and civilization continue to sweep over our borders, a dark tsunami that will drown our respective nations and our civilization. At the same time, we must resist immigration with all of our might, with ability and intellect and courage. It makes sense for Europeans to be consistent, fair, and just. Arabia for Arabs, India for Indians, China for Chinese, and yes, our European, America, and Russian homelands for ourselves and our expressions of life that constitute us.
That's right.
It's our enemies that are truly the evil ones. It's only an evil man who would seek to destroy other people, who would oppose sensibility and justice, as I've just spoken, who would oppose the rights of European mankind to live. Make it clear that it's our enemies who are the supremacists, the oppressors, the genocidal forces of history. We must, in our own movements, come to agreement with these other lands to stop interfering in their societies and stop supporting their enemies, such as the Zionists. And then we can sit down with their leaders in their countries and agree to return their nationals in Europe and America. For our military power, the military power we have in both Russia and America is indeed supreme. It's only our will that is suspect, only our will that is weak. Secondly, we must show that we represent justice and not become caricatures of our enemy's image of us. Our people are a moral people. And the truth is, our people will sacrifice everything, even their own lives, even their own families, to be moral. They must know that we represent what's good for our own people and indeed good principles for all nations and all peoples on the earth. We will not preach here one thing for ourselves and something different for the other peoples of the earth. We seek no empire. We seek no colonialism. We seek only the preservation of our own homelands and the people that make our homelands truly our home. We are not the promoters and the harbingers of hatred. It is those who seek to destroy the very life of our people who are the true masters of hate. Three, we must lessen among our own ranks and our own scholars the ideological conflict that racks, disturbs, and divides us. We who desire the preservation of our race, the very life of our people, must keep only one ideology as the unifying foreground, and that principle is simple. What's good for our people, we support. What's bad for our people, we oppose. What's good for our survival is our ultimate moral standard. It is concrete. It's a concrete goal. And that must motivate us above some abstract principle. Now, we have brethren in this room, brethren that are socialist or libertarian, Democrat or monarchist, communist or capitalist, Orthodox or Catholic or Protestant or even atheist. We can argue with our brothers and sisters as we would a family member on merits of religion or merits of some other sort of attitude or belief. But we are a group. We must be one family, one phalanx, one faith against the enemy arraigned against us. Abstract principle is not the important thing here. The important thing is the concrete survival of our overwhelming principle, the principle of our survival. Now, let me share an example of the devastating devotion to abstract principle, an example of how that's destroyed cases of our own freedom and even survival in Europe. As most of the scholars here are keenly aware, Greece and the Balkans suffered under centuries of tyrannical rule from the Ottoman Turks. At the end of the 18th century, the regime forbid publishing of books seeking the national and ethnic freedom of the Greek people and other people in the region repressed and controlled by the brutal Turkish regime. You know, even books of science and mathematics were forbidden publication for the Greek people because they wanted to keep the Greek people down at heel. A handful of Greek patriots began a publishing operation in the neighboring city, Vienna. And it was led by the Greek patriot, Phraates Rigas, and a couple dozen leading personalities. Now, the Ottoman Empire, the Ottoman Sultan, opposed this and appealed to the Habsburg monarch on the basis of the principle of legitimacy. Now, the principle of legitimacy was the watchword of that Napoleonic era. It was the idea that the crown heads would support each other against democratic and national movements. It is very similar today to the neocon-led globalism and their defense of so-called democratic principles around the world. Too many whites get obsessed with ideological, abstract principles, and sometimes they follow them in complete disregard of concrete reality, to the eternal shame of the Habsburgs. The monarch who challenged on this abstract principle of legitimacy bowed to the Sultan and closed down the Greek press and turned over Rigas and his European compatriots. They were taken to the Ottoman-occupied Belgrade and promptly tortured and murdered. The body of Rigas was thrown into the Sava on June 24, 1798. Luckily, Rigas' last words were preserved and carried down, and I share them with you now. He said, with not even the slightest whimper, without a bowed head, he said, "This is how brave men die. I have sown the seeds, and the time will come when my country will gather the harvest." Abstract debate must be set aside. What matters now is the concrete. We have a guide in the Roman example. Many Democrats gratuitously quote the supposed Roman motto, Vox Populi Suprema. And that's very common. All the Democrats quote it all the time. And that means the voice of the people is the supreme law. But the actual motto of the Roman Empire that dominated the Roman psyche and spirit for hundreds of years actually was this: Solus populi lex suprema est. And that means all power to the help or salvation of the people. That was the original Roman maxim. Although I am an American who reveres our original Constitution, if our alien Congress and states legally passed a constitutional amendment that ordered a policy of the end of our white race, I would not allow endorsement of an abstract principle to keep me from doing my duty. Constitutional law would not keep me from defending my people from a concrete threat. My friends, there's no abstract principle worth the destruction of our people. Our people's welfare must always be the issues. Abstract ideological questions of governmental form or religion must always be second to the well-being of our people. This is especially true in these times when the question of to be or not to be supersedes all other questions and other principles and other considerations. Now, by saying this, I'm not saying that we shouldn't be spiritual. We must be spiritual. We must be religious. We must have a religious feeling in our hearts and our minds and our souls. And I get that religious feeling when I stand on the mountaintop or when I look into the sparkling eyes of our children and when I look into the beauty of our men and women across this great land and across the world. I get that feeling when I think about the courage and the heroism and the sacrifice of our forefathers that shed so much blood and so many tears and so much to give us freedom and prosperity now here at home. Yes, there's religious freedom. There is religious feeling. But ladies and gentlemen, we can't sit and struggle among ourselves on what the one true religious approach has got to be. We have got to begin to clean the Aegean stables and address the problem of our survival. As I alluded earlier, the first task is to remove the enemies of our people who are behind the gates. Clean our Aegean stables. Those who sow defeatism, self-hate, self-doubt, weakness, degeneracy, not to clean our own Aegean stables will condemn us to feel the hooves of our enemies' horses on our own necks. Tell our young not to go volunteer on the foreign fields of war, born for alien insanities, such as in Iraq or Iran or elsewhere around the world. Dedicate your lives and tell them to dedicate their lives to the battle for freedom and survival right here in our own homeland, on our own soil. And five, we must call forth the passion in our people. In every way, we must celebrate who we are. We must nurture the love of our people. Stop condemning them for their failings. Evoke the latent courage that's in every spiral of DNA, in every cell of every person of our race. We must wash our hands, our hearts, and our minds with love of our people. We must wash ourselves with devotion to them that makes meaningless even the threat of imprisonment and death. We must sow the seeds, as Rita said. That is our task. Wherever we live, by whatever means at our disposal, no sacrifice is too great. No threat to us is too intimidating. No disappointment is too daunting. And we who are awake, and those who are still asleep in the nightmare for our people in the early years of the 20th century, we must fight to make sure that our comrades, our brothers and sisters, awake and claw their way to the dawn. We must help them shake off the shroud of defeatism and despair and know that we, European mankind, shall go from the edge of the abyss to the farthest star. Let every man and woman at the conference here today and on Friday, with the words of Rigas ringing in our hearts and minds, repeat the following. This is how brave men die. I have sown the seeds, and the time will come when my country will gather the harvest. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. This is how the brave men do it. This is how the great and brave man is doing. Но это заключительный был аккорд, но не финал, потому что мы хотим дать возможность еще высказаться нашим гостю с Киева, с Украины, да. Еще один наш соратник хотел сделать реплику. И, возможно, еще какое-то короткое выступление приветствия. Или какие-то 2-3 вопроса. В общем, еще 10-15 минут у нас есть. Давайте выслушаем несколько приветствий из России, пожалуйста. Представьтесь. Ходите.
Здравствуйте. Я представитель общественной организации.